Hello, creepies, and welcome to another middle-aged mini-episode on the Middle-Aged and Creeped Out podcast. Enjoy the show.
Hey, creepies, welcome to Middle-Aged Mini number 130. Nate is your tech engineer. We are your hosts, Todd and Sean, and we are middle-aged and creeped out. Sean and Nate, how are you guys?
Good night.
Good night. Oh, are you saying good night?
Good night.
Oh, okay.
Good night, folks. Good night.
Doing good.
Nate's like, sounds like it.
Nate just did like a full reset right in front of us.
Yeah, what?
Yeah. There was a little glitch and then right? Fired.
There we go.
But at least he knows what to do with his hands, right?
No. Got the wires touched.
You don't know what to do. So you take this end of the wire, and you take this end of the wire, and you touch them both to your tongue.
Hey. Hello. Hey, oh. Good. Yeah, we're
Nate
having a good
flambe,
night. Right?
Nate Flambe. Fricassee.
Yeah, we're having a good night. We needed this. We're having a lot of fun tonight.
That's right.
Always. We always have fun.
Amen,
if you could see us, we would have. We're having fun.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Listen to each other's gripes.
We're also
we have a lot of fun.
But we have fun doing it.
Very relaxed recumbent position. No.
You what?
I said we're in a very relaxed recumbent position right
That's
now.
That's right.
No, we're not.
No, we're not.
We do
anyway.
Need recliners, though. You're right. I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, when we start getting sponsored and stuff, we'll upgrade our seating.
I'm like, what's that noise? Massaging. Mm. What's that? That's heat.
This feels
Oh, Sean, why don't you tell me? I actually sound like Mr. Ed there. Oh, Sean. Let's get right to it.
Yes.
So, Sean, what are we going to talk about on this episode?
Oh, this is your pick.
It
so,
is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is the Linley Street Poltergeist.
Ooh.
Poltergeist.
Poltergeist?
I'm going to say that in a while.
Poltergeist!
Poltergeist, yeah. We can get our German going.
The creeps are like, whoa, he's yelling.
Okay. It is German, isn't it?
Yes.
Poltergeist.
Yes.
Yes.
It is. Poltergeist. Poltergeist. Little foundation, sir?
Yes. In November 1974, Linley Street in Bridgeport, Connecticut, became the epicenter for one of the most documented hauntings in Connecticut history. I don't know why I have to say it that
why
way.
Why are you saying it that way?
Connecticut. I don't know.
Why are you saying Connecticut?
I don't know. It's just Connecticut history. I don't know. Why are we ashamed of are we ashamed of Connecticut? Is that why I'm doing that?
Connecticut.
A small bungalow-style home owned by Gerald and Laura Gooden was reported to be under attack by otherworldly forces that were allegedly responsible for moving furniture, breaking windows, levitating objects, making a cat talk, which we'll get to that soon, and generally perplexing and terrifying. You got that story? Oh, it's a good story, man.
No,
perplexing and terrifying everyone who stepped foot in the house.
I'm just thinking of the Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
It's
talking kinda, cat.
It's kind of like that. It's awesome, and I can't wait, honestly.
Yeah,
it's my favorite part of this whole thing.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
The cat. You didn't hear about the cat, the demon cat?
No.
It's a talking cat in this thing.
I must have missed that one.
Oh, I'm going to talk about it.
Okay.
And I'm
so
excited
about Sabrina. I know that, yeah, they had a cat on the show. But
this cat is awesome.
But I don't know about this one.
Was he demanding catnip?
Yeah.
That's true, sir.
Well, as big as this house is, it's like a kitty litter box anyway. I mean, it's not very big. I mean, to be fair. Right? I mean, is it?
All right. If you say so.
It's kind of judgy. It's a little judgmental.
Yeah, so as we were talking about before we recorded, Nate noticed it was a small house. Mm-hmm. It's a tiny house.
It is.
And I did earlier say I didn't know anything about it, but I do believe I know what the story is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been a while since I've looked into it.
It's a pretty popular story among the paranormal ones.
Well, I mean, I remember.
And cat lovers?
It started jogging my memory, seeing that Ed and Lorraine Warren were the ones that investigated this.
We're going to do, that's on my list, we're going to do the Warren sometime.
Sure we are.
That might be a two-parter.
Allegedly. Oh, it needs to be. Mm-hmm.
Ed and Laura, I have my opinions on them.
Yeah.
So, with all respect, similar to Zach Bank.
It's a little bit of an eyebrow raise when you hear him. Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, very popular story. It says, yeah, so it talks about, like you said, Sean, like the moving furniture and the talking animals and all that. It says, what was different about this ghost story was that it wasn't just one person or family, but city officials used to fire and crime, describing rattling furniture and a small girl being slammed against the wall. That ain't cool.
No.
That's not good. That ain't good for anybody. Thousands from across the country, spurred at the time by the recent release of the movie The Exorcist, I've heard that, gathered in front of the small one-story four-room house looking to catch a glimpse of the phenomenon. And my phone just went, but there we go, which was said to also include, you know, like I said, the talking animals and strange noises. But after a Bridgeport police superintendent called the incident a hoax, the hype around the home and family died down. But now, 40 years later, author William J. Hall, a Bridgeport native, examines the events in his new book, The World's Most Haunted House. Oh, boy. The world's most
haunted. Crazy. It's only four rooms.
Yeah. The true story of the Bridgeport poltergeist on Lindley Street. So, Hall, Hall, who has worked as a professional magician, said he was a skeptic like everyone else until he went back to the original newspaper articles, audio interviews of the first responders, and city records. So that might have changed his mind.
Isn't that wild, though? You think about, like, ooh, satanic panic kind of feeling. Mm-hmm. But this one does have a lot of stories. This is the intensity of all the activity. Police and firefighters were called in, news reporters, priests, paranormal investigators, and, of course, Ed and Lorraine Warren. Mm-hmm. Thousands gathered in the street to try and glimpse the unexplained phenomenon, like you were talking about, and an international haunting sensation was born. What made this case so compelling and drew so much attention as compared to other quote-unquote hauntings was a high number of reputedly reliable witnesses who reported experiencing unusual activities firsthand. Beyond the Goodens and their friends, more than two dozen firefighters, police officers, and other investigators on the scene saw all sorts of bizarre happenings, including couches and chairs spontaneously moving across the floor, tables and refrigerators levitating, paintings and crucifixes falling off walls, and even knives flying through the air. They also recounted hearing a range of audio phenomenon, from inexplicable knocks, bangs, to disembodied voices. Sam and the family cat was alleged to have said a number of things, including jingle bells and bye-bye, while the decorative swans in the front yard were also accused of making unearthly sounds. That cat said to one of the...
don't stare at me, swan.
was an investigator or firefighter, yeah. and this cat apparently had conversations with people, and one of them said something about the cat looked up at this guy and said, "How's your brother?" And he said...
That would be...
And he looked at it and he goes... "My brother's dead," and the cat basically acknowledged, "Yeah, I know," and then started like the slew of like cuss words at him,
like he was a demon.
Demon,
Demon cat.
Isn't that weird, though? How's your brother? He's dead.
You know, he has a cat, though.
Why is it? It's a cat.
Cats are demons. Well, I'm saying.
I see what you're saying. Well, yeah. It goes without saying.
Did the cat say hello?
It did. It like freaked people out. Like.
Also, it says it was reported asking, "Where's his food?"
feed me, feed me now. That's a whole other story.
So
issues began in 1968 when Gerald and Laura Gooden were living in the house and adopted their daughter. What is that,
Marcia. Or Marcia.
Yeah, that's how I was looking at it.
I was afraid.
I guarantee it's Marcia.
It's Marcia, yeah.
Marcia. It was during this time period that the Gooden family insisted they could hear pounding noises from inside the walls, doors would slam shut on their own, and items would shift places. I think pounding in the walls would be pretty disturbing.
Yeah, it would. With all the witnesses, they said over 100. So I guess I'm assuming that's the emergency
and one cat.
Personnel.
And one crazy cat. Cool cat.
So there's something's got to be there, because even if some of them were in on it or making it, I don't think over 100 people are making up.
You wouldn't think
so. Stories.
There were accusations that Marcia was like admitting to doing some of this stuff and
voice throwing
for the cat. Absolutely right. And
I'm not the nummy. You're the nummy tossing
cat poo. No, that's funny. But they said that even a lot of these occurrences happened when she wasn't anywhere around this house, so it wasn't always related to her or her being on the premises.
Sorry to interrupt. Do you remember when we were talking about the Enfield poltergeist in England?
And the And the kids were like, oh, we did, you know, they did some of it.
They did to kind of keep up with it. I think that might, you know, that might be a,
yeah,
be
I was
a
thinking
part of
the
it,
same
where
thing.
Where it's, there's real paranormal stuff going on, but maybe they try to, they kind of get wrapped up in it and they want to, they feel like they're, the house is expected to have all this stuff. Like say maybe there's a day or two that nothing's happening and somebody comes in, they kind of feel obligated to keep it going. So does it take away what's happened already or is going to happen, but maybe they have a little part of it to just kind of, you know, mess around. I don't like the girls did, or whatever her name was at the infield.
This is
just an idea.
Interesting. Apparently, when the entity would, show itself or whatever, it was described by author Bill Hall, who wrote The World's Most Haunted House. They say by eyewitnesses, the entity resembled a large, cohesive assemblage of smoky, yellow, white, gauzy mist.
That's very descriptive.
Very descriptive.
Read that.
He is an author.
Like, hold on. Read that description
voraciously
again.
Voraciously.
Yeah.
Hopefully I can get through this again. It's a lot of hard words here.
Hedgehogs.
Resembled a large, cohesive assemblage of smoky, yellow, white, yellowish, white, gauzy mist.
Gauzy?
100%.
I don't understand the gauzy 100% stuff. Everything was
made up.
Gauzy.
It was... Gauzy, I would say like a solid looking, but yet still transparent, see through ish.
But then there's gauze. I don't get the gauze.
I don't know. It was an author that wrote the statement.
Yeah, Bill. That's his real
He's
name.
He's painting a picture in your mind.
Which makes it sound.
I don't think we've ever heard any description like that.
No, I haven't.
Voracious,
a yellow milky,
vigorously.
That's I was
horny hedgehog.
Horny hedgehog.
Right now, that's descriptive, but and that's totally
you
true.
You take
running and
vigorously
circles.
Horny hedgehogs in milky white gauzy
gauzy.
And what do you get?
Yellow biz. Yeah, right.
I don't want to think about that. Yeah, that's another. That's for another
Friday
podcast.
Afternoon. Right?
Yeah, they said a lot of clergy was called in to examine and bless the home. Building officials examined the foundation deemed safe. Not to be disrespectful for a rinky dinky house.
A little tiny.
A rinky dinky house. Got a lot of creepy,
little dollhouse,
stuff.
Right? This says activity reached its peak in November 1974, and by the time a number of investigators, including the Warrens, members of the American Society for Psychical Research, and the Psychical Research Foundation, in addition to the police, had staked out the house. They conducted interviews with family members. Stay out. Family. I know I'm getting hungry now. Family members, including Marcia, and detailed number of seemingly inexplicable happenings. In addition to the aforementioned activities, TVs were tipped over, dressers were moved around, window shades were rolling up, and wall shelves were pulling out of the wall, all without seeming provocation. The Goodens, who claimed not to believe in the paranormal, were increasingly stressed and vexed by what was going on in their home. Meanwhile, the local and national press covering the case, large and curious crowds were regularly gathering outside the house. At one point, a few zealous neighbors tried to dispel the dark spirits in their own fashion, attempting to set the house on fire. Whoa. They were quickly stopped.
Not in my neighborhood.
Arsonist!
Wow. Yeah, that's...
we're going to put a stop to this crap.
Always think about like when we went to Whispers Estate, we're just in that regular neighborhood. You know, nothing of the neighborhood or the town looked weird. It's just a normal. But we go to this house, and there's the houses right next to it. How would you like to live next to something that supposedly has paranormal activity? You know what I mean? Like, I would be captivated the whole time I'm living in my, like, I'd always be looking at out the windows just to see if I can
staring at it.
Yeah, catch something going, you know, by the windows or any noises. Yeah, that'd be very, very enticing for me. But fortunately, unfortunately, we don't have any neighbors that are living in any haunted houses around us. So.
You sure?
Well, yeah, I don't think so.
This says the situation seemed to be getting more intense. When, a few weeks into the investigation, a police officer witnessed the young girl, Marcia, attempting to tip over a TV with her foot. And when she thought no one was watching, Being caught in the act, she soon confessed that she was responsible for all the activities in the house and explained how she had done it all. The event was soon declared a hoax by the relieved police, who ended the official investigation, although questions remained as to how Marcia had been able to perpetuate some of the witness events that she wasn't even in the house, or those when she had been in another room. The majority of the investigators, press, and curious crowds all went away. And interestingly, even though Marcia had attempted being the admitted to being the cause of the events and apologized for her role in all of it, strange happenings purportedly continued to occur in the house for weeks to come. Eventually, the activities did stop and life went back to normal. It says more than 40 years later, what exactly happened at Lindley Street is still disputed. Some say it was all a hoax perpetuated by that young girl. Others who were there and allegedly saw unusual things happen when the girl wasn't around weren't so convinced that it had been faked. One thing is for sure, it is one of the most interesting and famous hauntings in Connecticut history.
So I think, and I've got some other little stories here, but before I get to that, you cannot get that many people to be in on it.
I know.
Especially professionals.
Like, did anybody see that little girl kick over? Nope, I didn't see it. Did you see it? Nope.
Yeah, you're not going to get police officers. You're not going to get clergy. All these people are going to
I mean, how, after all this in-depth investigation, like, I just saw her kick over the TV. Oh, mystery solved.
Yeah.
What the heck?
I mean, they're not going to all come up with a story that to fool the neighborhood and fool maybe she was, neighbors. And
she was overtaken by a demon who was like...
I'm saying, like, there's no way... Like, something had to have been going on in this house, mm-hmm. for real. Whether she was, like I said, like the infield. Maybe she was trying to keep it up a little bit, or when there was maybe a downtime where there weren't any activity. But I don't think... I think there's still real stuff going on, or did go on. I don't think you're going to get, like I said, firefighters and police officers and all these people in on a joke, on a hoax. And I just don't think that's feasible. But this is, what do I know, right?
This is funny that says, if you go, although the house at the center of Lindley Street event is still standing, we discourage anyone from bothering the people who live there now and strongly ask that everyone respects their privacy. The current owners have no interest in discussing the house's history, and of course, there's no trespassing on the property. Good. If you really need to see the house, you can find it via Google Maps, which offers a street view. That way you can visit without disturbing anyone or anything.
Yeah, you don't want to bug them. I don't blame them.
Just stand there awkwardly until you get invited.
So here's the quiet moments when they occurred never lasted long. The Goodens... standalone ashtray, the kind that sits on a solid round base about 30 inches high, suddenly and without warning shattered while still in the upright position and fell away from the wall. Oddly, it had shattered in the middle outward rather than snapping apart at the top. Laura put her hands to her face. Marcia began to cry and said, "Oh, Daddy, that was the ashtray we bought you for your birthday." "Who cares?" Jerry said with exhaustion, if not surrender in his tone. "Evil spirits are trying to kill us," Jerry said as he went into the kitchen. He returned with an odd coffee jar filled with holy water. He began dipping his hand in it and shaking it around onto objects, people, and walls. He was on a mission. Three deliberate, solid knocks were heard on the kitchen door. Jerry, exasperated and ready for a fight, quickly went to see who or what it was. Again, no one was there. Back in the living room, the tulip lamps had begun rattling. Jane entered the room to report that the rosary beads in Marcia's bedroom were moving, repeatedly flapping against the wall. The wooden wind chime in the hallway started swaying periodically and making noise, causing everyone to move their heads to see it all at the same time. And lastly, in an effort to help break the tension, Barbara, shadowed by Marcia, went into the kitchen to make fresh coffee. Ed Warren entered the kitchen and thanked Barbara for her thoughtfulness. As he did so, he called out to everyone to come get their coffee right away. Says Ed knew the table was not a secure location. So the dad was, what was his name? Jerry.
Jerry.
Yeah.
It's a good name, you know.
He was ready to fight.
Yeah, this John guy, I guess his buddy lived a few houses away, and they remembered all the crowds and everything, and he was trying to get to his buddy's house, and the police had everything barricaded off.
Mm.
So he had to, tell them their name and prove that that's who he was trying to get to.
Yeah, right.
And he said, one night we opened the front window and put our stereo speakers facing outside and played Sympathy for the Devil full blast.
Oh, that's
the
good.
Police were not amused.
I bet.
I'm sure not.
It's a great song.
It is.
One of my favorites, but that's funny. Oh, you got to have a little fun, right? Gosh. Yeah, I do love that song.
And then another guy.
I've never done that for a middle-aged woman, have I? Oh, mm-mm. I got
another guy, Nelson, I guess. Mandela. He worked. Yep. He worked in the city hall in 1974 in the data processing center, and they switched over to an automated system of the records, and they found the written statement from the police officer saying that, you know, the poo-poo hit the fan on Lenny Street.
You said poo-poo?
Yeah. In his account, the most chilling account was when he had written that the cat said to the officer, "How's your brother Bill doing?" And replied, "My brother's dead," and the cat scowled, "I know." He
told
actually
you that
wrote
happened.
He wrote that all in his report. And
creepy.
Other visual events in the report included the levitating refrigerator and an armchair that flipped over and could not be lifted back into place by the officers. One officer who witnessed it all took an immediate leave of absence, having been that shaken by the experience.
How could a little girl do all that? Like, that doesn't even make any sense.
I today firmly believe these events took place in the home, is what this Nelson said.
No credible professional police officer is going to take a leave of absence if nothing was real. I mean, they're not going to do that.
Yeah, they got shooken up.
Something happened. Whatever it was, however it happened.
I mean, the cat thing.
I mean, they said
that's kind of weird.
More or less, a lot of it stopped after Marcia was out of there. But, I mean, who's to say she wasn't the vessel for the happenings?
Yeah, right, exactly.
And she would be very busy with all this stuff, trying to keep up with all these people looking and watching and to see if what activity happens or is going to happen. I just don't believe it. It's all down to
a hoax.
Coming out of her. Mm-hmm. This last little story here says, a little past 2 p.m., things had quieted down. It was time for the police to leave. The four original responding officers said goodbye to the family and advised them to report any other disturbances. As they all walked down the front steps, Officer Tomic lagged behind. He called out to them that he forgot something and he would be right back. He had an idea. Tomic was convinced that whatever it was in some way an intelligent presence, which I believe that. It says, it seemed to taunt and tease like playing a child's game and mounting an occasional temper tantrum, unaware of and unconcerned about any problems associated with the damage. He also figured that this was the perfect time to take a closer look. So he saw that the Goodens and the Warrens were preoccupied in the kitchen as he made his way to Marcia's room where he planned to undertake an experiment of sorts. He thought to himself, if you can hear me, move something. Immediately, several items on Marcia's wall came to life. The baby picture shook, the cross shook, the cherub shook, but the wall itself did not vibrate. As these items seemed to be answering his request, he spoke again to himself that time offering the command, "Okay, now you can stop." Everything stopped at once. Tomic believed that he had just communicated with the entity or entities. He decided that that his finding was one of those things that should remain private for the time being. It most certainly was not going to find its way into any police report. That just might become a career breaker. He would not speak of this for the next 40 years.
Isn't that weird? That speaks volumes, like you've been saying.
Yeah. I'm in on it.
You're all in.
That's right. I'm all in. Like that.
We awkwardly just stand out on the sidewalk until they invite us in.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about it. Talk about the history.
I think there's something there. Or was there? Some things.
I would imagine there's nothing going on there now if they don't want to talk about it, unless they like to keep the freak to themselves. The freaky.
Yeah, you always wonder, like,
I don't know. Yeah. They just don't want the attention, but they
like
obviously
said, I mean,
still some of it.
Maybe Marcia was the cause of everything. Not that she was physically doing
where
that.
Where's she at now?
Whatever entity was traversing through her.
Well, what is a poltergeist? It attaches to, especially girls, but boys and girls, again, mainly girls that are going through puberty. That's what, and so it's kind of like their attachment to them, and that's when stuff happens. Mm-hmm. So if she was a teenager, then that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
It was because of where she was in her life. the age and all of that.
That is some
serious. That's what makes a poltergeist different.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the story. I like that it's a creepy place, and it's cool that it's still.
So we're going, not going?
No, we're going. We're just going to have to
Google.
Yeah, Google. Yeah, there's a place.
Her name's Marcia, not Carol Ann.
Right. Carol Ann. gosh. So I was listening to a podcast yesterday or the day before.
You listen to podcasts?
Uh-huh. And I can't remember the story. I can't remember the podcast. But they were talking about a place that had been haunted for years and years and years. Different people, families lived there. And then when they moved, the last family moved out, this new family moved in. And because they always say like, oh, well, you know, nope, I haven't experienced anything, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, they don't want to have anybody coming in. They don't want investigators. They don't want tourists. They don't want the attention. But they did give a quote, and it said, we have some weird things happen that we can't explain, but we don't want to go further than that. So it's kind of like that. It doesn't mean nothing's still happening. They just don't want to.
Nobody's talking about it.
They don't want
it.
The publicity. Right.
Yeah.
And so I thought, kind of made me think about that story.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a house. It was a house that they don't want to be in the papers. They don't want people coming around and bugging them and coming
through
the house.
Would you, like,
but
if
they
you
said.
If you had a house weird. Like this, would you want to have all that notoriety? I probably would not. I mean, to be honest.
No, I don't.
I can't really understand that. Yeah.
No, because it'd be hard.
Get off my lawn.
It'd be hard to deal with it. Period. You know, if you're going through that with your
especially
family,
with but kids
like,
and, you,
yeah, I don't know.
I get that.
Talking about this,
I don't think I would.
It's giving me goosebumps as I'm thinking about this video I just watched this past week.
Oh no!
the video has a mom and I believe her son, like laying on the bed or whatever, and like the lights or something or maybe some noises were coming outside in like the kitchen area outside the bedroom. So, but as you're watching this, if you watch the door, you start seeing a shadow person's head from the top jamb or header of the doorway keep poking down and like looking into the bedroom. It does it like 3 times. You can see this head pop down.
That's scary.
And then something obviously happened out there. So the mom jumped up and went out there. And as she went out there, the door shut and more or less like trapped the kid in the bedroom. And then after like, you know, 5-6 seconds, she was able to get the door open and back to him.
How old was the kid? Like little or just?
Probably like 8 or 9, maybe 10.
Mm.
Wasn't okay, like so young, young.
Yeah, yeah, right.
But yeah, the first time I watched the video, I didn't notice the shadow person in the doorway.
Look that up.
Poking its head down from the top. And then I was like, well, that's weird. What? There has to be more to this video than what I'm catching.
Yeah, right.
And so then the second time I watched it, I saw the head drop down. I'm like, and it like gave me full body chills.
That's giving me chills just thinking about it.
Oh, kind of like that? About
yeah, just like that.
That's a good one. I'll have to look that up.
Peekaboo.
Yeah, it is. It's creepy.
I see you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like.
And then it takes me back to when we were at Waverly Hills. I mean, sort of the same.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing was happening at the very end of the night.
I don't know what we saw that night. But
nope.
That's still creepy.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Well, good. I hope the creepies enjoyed the Lindley Street.
Mm-hmm. You know,
that was it's a dinky little house with a lot of activity.
Yeah.
Or did.
Yeah, dinky is correct.
Yeah.
Dinky. But cool.
Full room.
So, with that said, Nate, what do you got for us, sir?
Lindley, your ears. That's a wrap.
Wow. Thank you, Nate.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one.
That's right.
That's a good way to end it. Thank you, creepies, for listening to our middle-aged mini number 130 and our discussion on the eerie Lindley Street poltergeist. And we'll talk to you later.
Bye.
See ya.